My name is Valerie Gurka. I'm from the Knitting Factory, and I'd like to quickly introduce our panelists, and then we're going to go into a quick video. We have Linda McLaughlin from Live of Music.
Hello.
We have Lou Playa from Reverb Nation. Yeah. We have Evan Lowenstein from StageIt.com.
Hi.
And we have Laura Wilson from World Cafe Live.
Hello.
What makes me become a fan of a band is when I feel like I know them, and that might come from listening to their music over and over, but usually it's some type of interaction with the band, whether it's a tweet, Facebook post, shaking hands after the show, but usually I have to know the band, so really love them.
If I'm getting pushed a little bit from my friends who are saying, like, look, you got to go see, these guys have the most incredible live show you've ever seen, you know, and there's a little bit more buzz around them.
How do I find out what bands are good? I listen and watch what my friends are doing, and I watch my Facebook tickers, see what they're listening to, and of course I always, you know, check out, you know, either word of mouth and word of Facebook. I do what my friends are doing. I want to be with them, and I trust them.
I do have an extensive poster collection, and, you know, over the years and all my years of going to concerts, I mean, I don't have a lot of art, real art in my house per se, but I frame posters, and I have hundreds of posters, and I go to a show, and that's the first thing that I look for.
I'd say the thing that makes me engage most with an artist would be, I don't know, general belief in what they're doing, making them sound like they're doing something new and exciting, something that sounds like it's from, you know, 2015, and we're still stuck in 2012.
It's nice to have an incentive. If I can go to a show knowing that there's like a limited edition 45, like, you know, like a record that I can't get at a record store, I'll go. I go to a show to, like, watch how they perform it. You know, I don't care if it doesn't sound exactly like it does on a record. I want to see it done live, and I want to see how they do it live.
What gets me out to a live show is to see the band perform. I want to see people playing instruments. I want to see how the song is being built. I don't want to see a guy pushing a button on a laptop. If he is, he better be dancing around.
What gets me out as a person to a show is the story.
It's more than just seeing that band. And maybe they put a bill together with all cool bands, and I kind of know them or have heard of them, so I'm getting more than just the band I'm going to. When musicians put a show together and it's cohesive, like, I'm more likely to go to that show than like the other 10 shows that they're doing in the next 2 months in the same city.
I love bands that I can relate to and get something from what they have to say.
Okay, so that video kind of gives you a really clear idea that, I kind of liked it dark, but okay. You know, it kind of gives you a really clear idea that there's a lot of word of mouth still going on, even with all the social media that's available. Would you guys agree? I mean, the long and the short of it is, if your friend tells you to go to a show, you're going to go because you trust your friend, whether that's on Facebook or Twitter or just because you're all hanging out. So we've done, do you want to move into the next proprietary research?
Yeah, basically what we're going to do is we're going to have each panelist give their perspective on fan engagement, and then we'll go into the actual panel part of the panel. So Linda is going to start off and talk about some research, and let me just get that pulled up real fast.
So basically, you know, I work in music on both sides from an industry and artist perspective. And I think the reason that you guys are all here is because you've decided to take your career very, very seriously and not just be an artist, but be the business behind your artist. So most importantly, when we were looking at all of the reasons that people go, and this is proprietary research, we have a book coming out, my company, and we just did a survey of hundreds of people. And number one is, my friends are going and that's why I go. And then secondly, it's just they love seeing new music. But most likely the reason they're seeing your new music is because their friends told them to go. You can go to the next one. And the reason that they keep coming back for more is, I don't know how many of you have gone to see a live band and they think that they're doing you a favor by being there. So you need to give your all when you're on stage. If you have any inhibitions, leave them in your bedroom. When you get on stage, they're there to see you live, and that's going to keep your fans coming back because you're doing something more. You know, whether it's that you're wearing a crazy color or that you have a crazy song or you have a crazy dance or you make jokes in between, whatever it is that your strength is, you need to really feature that and hone that in. I mean, I see some friends in here in the audience, and they're great performers, and they do some really cool things on stage, and that's why we go to see them again and again. So venues, when you go back to a venue, and I'm sure some of you, whether you play there or you attend them, a lot of it is the music that they choose to host. So I'm sure that when you talk to venues, and there's a lot of people here that are more experienced to talk on that, but from an artist's perspective, the first question you always get is, how many people can you bring in the room, right? Well, if you're not engaging your fans, no one's going to show up. And the way to engage your fans is to do something new and interesting and think outside the box. But these are results that we just got in the last 2 months. And so I think it speaks pretty clearly to, despite everything else, there's a lot of word of mouth, a lot of you giving it your all on stage and being able to bring that back again and again. And then more rooms will book you. Oh, yeah. And then this is the engagement. We're going to talk about this again later. So I thought this was really interesting. We took all of the biggest places where people talk about their music, from Facebook to Twitter. I thought Twitter was going to be way up on the list, and it's not. And I don't know if anybody else is as surprised by that as I am. I mean, I was just shocked. Blogs are number four. You know, so video streaming, if you're putting your videos out there and you're streaming them on live, whether it's live stream or some other platform, you know, where you're sort, even if it's just you and your band and you guys are doing something in your house and, you know, you're playing music and people can log in to see it and it's not a live show and it's different. Nobody else can see it unless they're on this and they have a password to get in or whatever. People are really interested in this, you know, and radio is still in the mix there. So I think that speaks volumes. But Facebook was number one. And we did an interview yesterday with the guy who's the doctor of pages, Matt Kahn, and he was talking about Facebook and the strength of Facebook. I mean, from everybody from Beyonce to your, you know, starting out indie band, the band pages are really important.
All right. Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome.
Excellent. All right. And Lou, what's your perspective on fan engagement?
I mean, I think humans right now are pretty much, it's not working.
This is on?
If you talk into it.
Want me to sing? So, you know, I think there's, you know, lots of everything the humans are doing now is basically about fan engagement and interacting. It's just what people are growing up on. So it's kind of like what Reverb Nation did. We basically built everything on fan engagement, interacting with people. And you got to take it on out into the live stage as well. But we're an online marketing company. So this is just, you know, we do a lot of things. We have email systems, distribution, a whole bunch of marketing tools. And one of the fairly new tools we have is basically introducing social networking to venues as well, so venues can interact with bands and fans and everything else. And just a slide, I don't know if you could see it too good here. Actually, I can't barely see it. I'm going to look it over here. My eyes are worse. So I'll go down a couple of things here. So, you know, you have your submission dashboard, and venues can see everything about the artist from data and everything else, who's great to book and whatnot. Artists have the ability to invite friends. There's a whole bunch of different things. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because it's hard to see, and it's, I don't know if any of you guys are, is there a lot of venues here? Just a couple. So I think it's more about fans, and I want Valerie to talk more about venues since she is the venue.
Okay, yeah. Oh, as far as the platform? Right, yeah. We'll be talking about that later. Great. Okay, did you have anything else you wanted to say on your perspective?
No, I mean, I think you just got to keep engaging and interacting with your fans. It's just what people are being brought up on. I mean, the younger kids, I have teenagers. I mean, that's all they do. It's all about interacting. And you can't stop. You just got to be where they are, where your fans are, and just, you know, comment, answer comments, things like that.
Okay, thank you, Lou. All right, Evan, we're going to play a little video, but first you're going to set it up. I'll fix it.
You'll fix that, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm a recording artist for 18 years. I think I played my first show here in 95. So as an artist to my fellow artists, I find it's a little bit challenging for me to tell you exactly what to do. I feel that artists, by their very nature, know how to engage with their fans. And every night they get on stage, and if it doesn't work, they're going to figure that out pretty quickly. But what we have created is a live video streaming platform for artists to connect with those fans. No matter who you are as an artist, you simply cannot hit every market in the world. So with the advancements in broadcasting and the internet bandwidth capabilities, you can now go direct to your fans from your laptop to theirs. We are a complement to live touring. We are not trying to replace live touring. But again, it gives you an opportunity to engage with your fans. When you have so many social media platforms existing right now that you cannot monetize from, which we'll talk about later, this is a platform that no matter what artist level you're at, whether you're from the top all the way down to just starting out, even as an artist, I hate saying the top versus when you're starting out, whether you're established or not yet established as an artist, this platform allows you to monetize the relationship with your fans, especially in an era where your fans have now become your friends, a little more challenging. But what you're about to see is country star Jake Owen, who's on tour, touring stadiums with Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw, who uses our service quite often. And we're a new service, so if you haven't heard about us yet, that's why. But here you go.
Telling someone this is only the second interview I've done today, but I did this thing last night on stageit.com. I don't know if you've ever checked this out. You should totally check
it. Didn't you do? I follow you on Twitter. Didn't you do a thing in your kitchen?
Yeah, you guys won't.
I didn't believe this.
Like,
watch the stage it, but
I've come to realize, and I hate to say this, but like I don't tell my label a lot of stuff that I'm gonna do because I feel like they'll start going, oh, I don't know if you should do that or not. I don't know, but so I just did it, and I signed up by myself in my kitchen for the stage it thing. Applied to play a show. And then what people do is you can sell tickets online for people to watch you online. It's kind of like what we're doing right now, this virtual thing. And so I just said, like, pay what you want. Some people paid 50 cents. Some people paid 10 cents. Some people paid, like, 10 bucks. But then they can tip you to play songs. So last night I sat in my kitchen and I said, whatever you guys pay to watch me play and tip me, I'll take all that money and I'll give it to my charity, St. Jude, we were just talking about. And I raised over $1,000 sitting in my kitchen last night playing acoustic guitar. I do that every night.
Serious?
My web guy called him yesterday. I was like, hey, dude, I think I'm going to do this. And he's like, oh, yeah, that'd be a great idea. We should plan it out. I'm like, no. I mean, like, I'm going to do it tonight. And so I literally put a Twitter up, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours before I did it. I put 200 tickets up for sale. They sold out like that. And over $1,000. I mean, that's just modern technology and awesome. The fact that people have good hearts and they'll do that. I think that's pretty cool.
So Jake has now played three times. He uses the ability. Let me pull back for a second and then we can move on. But I looked at technology as an artist and I really built this company with a focus of what is good for artists. And just because technology exists does not mean that we should be using it, especially when we're trying to bring back a sense of mystery and romance to the relationship between an artist and fan. Case in point is just because technology allows you to have thousands or hundreds of thousands of people to watch you in a room doesn't mean that you don't want to limit it to 200 people or to 20 people if you want to. Another thing at StageIt is that we do not archive any of our experiences because we're more interested in artists going viral and not necessarily their videos. And an artist, by our very nature, we perform live, and that's what we do. So whenever you have a scenario where you can keep the frequency of an experience down to one time, the value on the other side of the equation goes up. So value equals experience over frequency, and there's a higher perceived value, and fans are willing to spend money. So Jake's done three shows already, and he uses a feature called Pay What You Can, which means fans can spend 10 cents, as low as 10 cents on a show, and he's averaging $9.88 per person, which is $9.78 more than they have to spend for a big artist that probably has plenty of money and doesn't need it. So anyway, I'll move along. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but that's a way for artists to engage with their fans.
Thanks, Evan. All right, Laura, so what's your perspective on fan engagement?
Hi, I'm Laura Wilson, and I work with World Cafe Live in Philadelphia, which has been open for 7 years, and we also just opened a venue in Wilmington, Delaware last year, so we're in our first year there. We have a little bit of an interesting scenario for a venue in that in our main in our building in Philadelphia, we are also there's a non-commercial radio station, a really excellent one, WXPN. So from the start, we had sort of a different approach than many other venues who just sort of open up on their own. In each venue, there are two spaces as well. So there's this is a large room in Philadelphia, which has 650 cap, and then there's also a small room, which is a 200 cap venue, which allows us to do a lot of different interesting things on the same night. There's also some slides of our Wilmington venue, which just opened, which is in a rehabbed theater, and it's the same scenario where we have a large room, which is 750, and a small room of 160. And so for us, you know, coming at the venue perspective, it's not only about, you know, getting the people in, which is obviously very important, and getting the artists in, but then making sure that we have a quality experience when they get there so they want to return. So it's the whole package. And because not only are we a venue, but we're also a bar and a restaurant, we want to make sure that all of that is good and cohesive across the board.
Great. Thank you. So as you can see, we have a very diverse group of panelists here with different perspectives from the artist side, the venue side, the technology side, and the research side. So let's go into some of the panel questions here. Linda, what are the top five essential ways that venues and artists should engage with their fans?
That actually goes back to the other slide. You know, obviously Facebook was number one, and then videos. I don't think there's any way to undervalue a video because people like things that are tactile. You know, if you can tweet a picture or put a video on Facebook or stream something, there's always something more to see there. We did a huge show in New York where we live streamed the whole thing both nationally and internationally, and people that tweeted while they were watching the show on the stream, we gave something back to them. And then those people came back for the next show on the stream. So there's definitely some sort of give back and keeping the fans engaged in that way. And I think that that's basically what it's all about. When you have these friends and these fans that come back, it's because they feel like they're a part of something and everybody does want to be a part of something. After the videos, it really comes down to your performance again. And then you're just reaching out, whether it's through your emails, regular email blasts, or whatever your email lists are. And it goes down in that perspective.
I think also like giving away something is a way to engage also, whether it's, you know, give away your music in return for something. You don't just give it away. Give it away for an email address or a share or something like that. And also just to also comment. And again, when I said interacting before, just keep commenting and letting them know that they're part of a two-way conversation.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, I mean, when I came back, I had a brief break. And 3 years ago, I came back to the venue and we only had 1,000 Facebook followers and maybe like 400 people on Twitter. And so I sort of took over that. And then in the first year, we got up to 7,000 Facebook fans. And a lot of that was giving tickets away, but allowing people to choose what they wanted to win instead of just saying, okay, we're giving away a pair of tickets to, you know, whatever show. We said, okay, what do you want to win tickets to? Which is great because we would get 60 people at a time saying, I want to go to this show, I want to go to this show. And then everyone would see, they were doing the promotions for us of all the different acts that we had going on. And then, you know, we would choose someone randomly from that list. But we would do that, you know, maybe every 2 or 3 weeks, and the response was phenomenal. So definitely giving things away helps.
Great. Linda, what is the process for becoming a center of influence in order to build a community fan base?
So just like you guys want to engage your fans, we want to engage you. So we took the time to sketch out these questions and really think about what matters to you because you're here and you're taking your time to get real answers and not BS. So I think some of the important things about a DIY artist, I mean, the evolution of the DIY artist is these people who have really gotten sick of being told who they have to be or why they have to be somewhere or the genre specific. You know, there's a lot of people in here, I'm sure your music is very cross-pollinated. You might say like, oh, I'm punk rock, or I have a little bit of pop, but I've got a reggae feel. I mean, that's sort of like, I feel like an old world way of thinking. So when you're trying to make people understand who you are, it's really hard because you're new and everybody's all about the buzz, the buzz, the buzz. So sometimes you need to be the buzz. You know, like, oh, I can't get into this event. Well, then be the event. Create your own event. You know, rent the space out, put some of the money out, and then get 5 other bands to do it with you. And then they bring in all of their friends, and then you're constantly creating something. So now you are the event. And then you go to press and you say, oh, you know, I'm doing this event and I'm hosting it and I'm featuring these 4 other bands. And then suddenly you're not just some DIY artist, you're a business person who happens to be an artist and that's your true love. But in order for you to do your true love, you have to think with a business head.
And you probably gain more fans because not only do you have your own fans, but you can cross-pollinate.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, when you do these shows with other bands, like we put a few festivals together and we pick bands that don't all sound the same so that people can get exposed to other music. And maybe you'll gain some and maybe you won't. But if you don't try, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And I think that it is really hard to say what's going to engage people. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to be the one in control. If you have control, then there's no stopping you. But when you're applying to things and trying to get into other things and maybe you're getting rejected, well, then maybe you need to take control. You know, and I think Stage It, Reverb Nation, these are both platforms that allow you to do it too. I mean, I'm a part of that as well as an artist. But on the industry side, you know, I can definitely say from the other side that it does work.
Yeah, let's segue right into that. What existing technologies can you use to be able to engage with your fans and build opportunities?
I can answer. You want me to answer that?
Yeah. Go.
Okay. I mean, I think that we're obviously looking at a bunch of technologies here that exist. And, you know, again, I would say to artists also, by your very nature, you use different probably different, you know, with these technologies here, and you may be listening to us and going, I don't know why Twitter is so low, because it really works well for me. So I think an artist, you know, you do your own sort of research and you have to figure it out. From a venue perspective, I would actually be really interested in sort of watching how you do things. I'll share that from a venue perspective, you know, before I did Stage It, I actually ran a bunch of marketing for some of the bigger, from bigger brands, like one here in Los Angeles where I'm from is a company called the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. And what I found is that, you know, I think the correlation, the similarities is that they use it a lot for customer service more than anything. Of course, they shared that there's a new coffee or, like in this case, a new artist that's coming, and that's really important. But something I saw when Nick Adler spoke about what they're doing at the Roxy, which I found was really interesting, is very similar to what I found at the Coffee Bean, whereas somebody might get a coffee they weren't satisfied with, and they're going to take it right to Twitter. Instead of going back to the barista 5 feet away and saying, you know, can I get a another coffee? This was cold, or I didn't like it. They're going to take it to Twitter to tell the world about how crappy their coffee was. And I feel like you guys have a tremendous opportunity as a venue to, when a fan says something or walks out of your venue, I know how important it is for them to come back. And if they have a shitty experience, which is bound to happen, you have an opportunity to go directly after them and say, hey, how can we make this better? Come back. I mean, have you found that as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're really fortunate in that most people send us kind of crappy emails rather than putting it on Twitter for the most part, which is nice of them. But we are really responsive, and we're really, really, really into guest relations as a venue because, right, you know, we're also a restaurant, and, you know, there's just so many factors that can go into it. But yeah, I mean, particularly with Twitter, it's great for being interactive. I mean, when it's on Facebook, I don't like it as much. But I feel like if the people that respond and comment upon not having a great time or had a little bit of an issue, then, you know, I always get back to them right away about it. But we're lucky. It's not too often.
Right.
Lou, you have 1.5 million subscribers who are artists. So how do you see them being successful engaging with their fans?
Yeah, so we have 2.2 million.
Oh, 2 million. 2 million. Oh, congratulations.
Who's counting?
and we also have, like, I think it's roughly 100,000 labels, managers, and venues. I think we have 30,000 venues or something like that right now. Don't quote me on that. I think that's what it is. But, yeah, we just provide these tools. You know, we rely heavily on Facebook because that's where your fans are. You have to be able to connect with your fans. And, of course, they're on Facebook right now, Twitter followers, things like that. And all of our tools, whether it's a widget or a Facebook application, and on the venue side and the artist side, there's opportunities to share it, to invite people, to get a, like I said, give away your music or give away a ticket, give away your music, get an email in return. So there's always something engaging. Everything we do is integrated. So it's all, I guess we're probably one of the only, well, maybe the only company that does everything from email management system or fan management system, all the way to digital distribution and Facebook apps, press kits. Press kits are really, you know, valuable in the data that we give to the venue. So that's kind of like, not really engaging, but it is engaging with the venue itself. And it just gives everybody, it's much, much more efficient and, I guess, cost-effective in the long run. And make better decisions.
Great. Linda, can you describe some high-level engagement strategies that might be unlikely?
So I got permission to tell this story because I think it's really important for you guys to hear because I knew it blew my mind. I have a friend that we work with in New York, and he was signed to a major label and toured, and he was with the Bogmen originally, and then he had his own album that he was trying to promote. And the label wasn't interested in promoting his original album, and he was sort of put off by this because he's like, oh, I had this great band with you, yada, yada. So it was CMJ in New York, and he wanted to get some buzz around his show. He couldn't get an official showcase, and it was really off-putting. So he's like, you know, I'm going to do my own thing and try to get some buzz around it. So he goes to Brooklyn, and it's sort of a seedy part of the area, and he goes up to these hookers, and he's like, I'm going to do a hooker runway show. Do you guys want to be in it? And he gets, and I'm not kidding. So he gets hookers. He goes to every borough of New York, okay? Picks up a hooker from each borough, tells them to wear their most outrageous outfit, sets up a catwalk in a local club that he's played in 100 times, and has these hookers walking the catwalk while he's standing there with his little three-piece band. Well, every single press person came to this event. It was non-official. It was not affiliated with CMJ. He called it the non-official CMJ showcase. He got more press than any official showcase that year. So obviously, I'm not telling you to get hookers. I'm not telling you to do this. Please do not quote me on that.
Did he pay for them?
He did not. They came willingly because they said they felt valued because many of them were artists and dancers.
Nice.
Who had turned to this other life. That's a whole other conversation. It's another panel. Anyways, all that to say. But what I'm telling you is, like, you know, this think out of the box mentality. I mean, there's no golden rule that's going to tell you, oh, this is going to work for you. This is going to make you famous. This is going to bring people to you, your shows. But I think it's really powerful to say, he tried something that nobody would have done, and it really worked. And trust me, that label was on the phone the next day. Oh, we want to do your next show. We want to promo it. Additionally, my band and my company has been working with a lot of charities. So I don't know. I mean, I happen to really love animals. I just am obsessed with animals, probably more than people. So I always want to do stuff with animals, and I find that that brings a whole new group of people in, because if you're giving back your proceeds, and, you know, 0% of zero is zero. So if you do something and you give back, you know, that's going to pay it forward later on down the line. So if you do a charity and you're featuring that, I'm going to give all my proceeds to whatever your favorite charity is, you get people from the charity, you get people from the music. People all feel like they're doing something good. You give everything back, and suddenly you've got a room full of new fans. And then they're going to come back and say, oh, this is the band that does stuff and pays it forward, whether it's Honor the Earth or ASPCA or whatever. So it's that sort of out-of-the-box thinking as opposed to, I want to showcase at South By.
Those are really great examples. Evan, do you have any examples for success stories, too, that are kind of out of the box?
I do. How many people here who have heard of Jake Owen, who's just on the screen here? Okay. How many people? So Jake has played the platform, as I mentioned before, three times. And even though he said he made over $1,000, he mostly comes when he's drunk. And so he didn't even know he made more than that. But so he does about $3,000. He limits his shows to 300 people, as I mentioned before. But how many people here have heard of some two great artists named Steve Carlson and Christian Kane? So, okay, great. Okay, so two Friday nights ago, these artists, who are just working artists like many of you, came to our platform two Friday nights ago and did $14,000 from their laptop in 30 minutes. Okay, so we have a lot of artists who are making thousands of dollars. The first time you use our platform, you will make money. I don't want to go back to this about us for a second. I'm just saying that's an unlikely success story. I am learning more about artists from our platform and watching them because they're calling attention. I guess they'll... can we do that after? I mentioned, but I will just quickly to answer. She's referring to the fact that we limit the number of tickets because I think that we think that's important to give the artist the ability that, just as I mentioned before, just because technology allows it to be unlimited, we think it's important to create a sense of value and scarcity and some exclusivity by keeping people out. Sometimes an artist wants to play when the Rolling Stones play the Roxy. That's their prerogative to keep a smaller, more intimate show and to create higher perceived value. So we give the artist the ability to do that. And again, by playing you know, more times, you'll come watch them in a future show.
So since we're talking about perceived value, how valuable are the social media metrics? Mm-hmm. And Evan, you know, how do you translate that into real dollars?
Okay, this is something I've been talking about a lot lately. I think as an industry, we've been chasing what I refer to as phantom metrics. It's been a little bit disheartening. It goes back to MySpace when we started with that in 2004. And I remember a label signed a band that had 50,000 friends, only to find they couldn't even draw four people to a venue. And I think it's challenging for us as artists as well. Like, what do these likes and followers and subscribers, what do they mean? And I think it's just been frustrating for us that we have not turned the corner to get the metric that's hard for us as artists to talk about, but really is important, and that metric is money. And so it's just been a bit of a challenge, and I think that we've spent so much time working on what, in terms of what do followers and likes and stuff mean in terms of putting money in my pocket to allow me to continue what I need to do as an artist to perform. And so, again, it's a question that in terms of real dollars, what we have created our platform simply to take the top of that funnel with all these followers and really turn it into what we perceive it as, which is gigantic mailing lists, and try to port those people over someplace, keep doing what you're doing, but bring it someplace where you actually can make some money from that. If it's $25 or $25,000, at least it's something, because right now all these other platforms are making a lot of money off you creating content for them and not giving you anything back. So for us, we created a platform that is for artists to actually make money from your social media platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing is you should only use tools that are tracking things for you. Mm-hmm. There's lots of tools out there, all different types of companies and everything else, and even Google Analytics is great for it. But you know, we make sure that everything we do is tracked, because you know, if you know where your fans are connecting with you, it's just super important so you can market to them more efficiently. So you got to stick to companies that actually do tracking for you.
And let's kind of go over some, what are some other tools that are out there, not necessarily the ones that we've been talking about so far, but what are some other tools out there that do engage fans? Linda, do you know?
Well, I actually wanted to dovetail a little bit into that and off of that. We've also been doing something where, you know, everybody has a friend at your show. I mean, you know, the whole idea is to get people at your shows that aren't your friends, right? Yes. Okay. So the whole point of doing that is, like, when you get your friends there, you get one friend that goes out there and maybe handles some sort of survey or poll for you, and they hand it out, and they can fill it out online or something, and that'll give you really accurate feedback from the people that are at your shows of what they liked that you did and what they didn't like. And then you know what to do again and what not to do again. And I think that's really valuable because that's going to keep the people that are there coming back as well.
Can I just interject for a second?
By all means.
It's just a different opinion. Obviously, these are opinions.
We had a lot of those before we came in, too.
Exactly. I have a different take on it. Simply because I think as an artist, I think it's our responsibility to know what our fans want. And by that, I mean that if you ask your fans, how many people here are actually artists? So one of the things that's interesting being an artist is that if you ask your fans at the end of a show, do you want me to come back out? They're always going to say yes. But at some point, as artists, we need to know that we need to leave, you know, the stage to keep them wanting more. So you can't just ask your fans, in my opinion, what they want. It is your responsibility to know how they're reacting. And I'm not saying there's nothing against survey, but I do take a little bit more of the Steve Jobs approach. That doesn't mean we don't value our fans. That's everything to us. But sometimes it's about, you know, feeling that vibe, and you know on a certain song, you read it a different way, it's time to play a faster one because they're falling asleep. Whatever that is, I don't know if you'd go out there and ask them that, if they'd say, if they know actually to say, I think a faster song would probably help about now. I think that's really a lot on the artist to sort of figure that out.
Just to clarify, I'm not talking about music. What I'm talking about is your ability to bring people into the room. So, to be very specific on example, on a show that I did where I had five other bands join, we did things that no other band did. We had a step and repeat. We had a red carpet. We had a tweejay in the DJ booth that had a screen that showed up in the room that everybody could see the tweets as it happened so that they felt like they were a part of it. And then the live stream tweets as well. So what I wanted to know from the people in the crowd was, did you like a tweejay? Was it completely boring to you? Was it distracting to have this thing on the wall that people were talking about that weren't even in the room? Or did you like it? And so, you know, the long and the short of it is they can choose to participate or not. I can choose to value their opinion or not. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to play my slow song. If one person in the room is touched by a slow song, that makes me very happy. But if, you know, if I see people are jumping around and want to dance, then maybe I'll cut it out that set. Musicality is a whole other conversation, and we're not talking about that here. And I'm speaking from an artist who's trying to be a business person as well, which is what I feel that I'm doing. So that's what I'm trying to tell you to do as artists, for those of you that are artists in the room that are sick of other people. You know, you're paying PR agents, or maybe you're paying a radio person or whatever, and they're not doing anything for you. And a lot of the tools that are out there allow you to do these beginning steps yourself. So save your money, put it into your fan engagement, and promote yourself.
Cool.
We did.
There is one.
Fan engage.
That's their fault. I don't work for South By. In my book, it's in there, just so you know. It's the hashtag is fan engage. It's in there. And we've been tweeting from it. Well, I guess the music dropped the ball. Were music that was interactive. I mean, I don't work for South By. I can't say what they did in their book. Mm-hmm.
Is that not a valuable bit of information if they start walking out? Okay, but were you here earlier when I mentioned specifically that it's a great tool for customer service to actually hear? That's why I'm saying you don't necessarily have to ask. They will speak up, many people. And I believe that if somebody says something in social media, you can multiply that at least times 10. So if one person is having a bad experience, there probably are 9 other people. And I don't know if that's the right number, but there probably are 9 other people who aren't enjoying themselves as well.
At the end of the day, I think what you're saying is valuable. I think that we need to be everywhere. I think that people need to know about us. It sucks that our hashtag wasn't in the book. It was online. Really? Really?
We had the vibe.
We're musicians.
I was about to bring candles
in here.
Turn
that light off.
The cameras, I guess. Okay.
I just actually wanted to make a point to what Linda was saying earlier about taking a survey. We have a lot of tools within the venue, and like everyone who purchases a ticket online gets asked how they heard about this. And I don't have anyone ask me what the results were for shows. And it's something that I can, and we also have a list every week of the top shows that get the top 15 hits and exactly where all their hits are coming from, whether from our blasts, from Facebook, from the artist website, whatever. I can pull that for anybody. Like, so
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
That's amazing.
So if a local artist who is trying to develop and who, you know, I believe in, or I mean, obviously I don't want to pull it for like every single show that I do because we do 550 shows a year. But, you know, if somebody is really making an effort, I'm happy to provide you with that information. And then you're going to know if people are hearing about it, and 50% of them are from friends. That's where they heard about it from.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether they heard about it from Facebook, whether they heard about it from a print ad, from a blog, whatever it is. So there might be things out there that you don't even know exist, but it can't hurt to ask.
And I'm glad you clarified, because I think they are separate things. And But even what you're talking about is more fact-based. Like, how did you find out about it? I found out about it from my friend, John.
No, Evan, your point was good, and I totally knew where you were coming from. So I was like, no. That's a whole other conversation. But that was a good point, too.
Thanks.
I want all peace and love in the room, people. I want us all to succeed.
Actually, just like dovetailing on Facebook, Lou, let's talk about Facebook advertising. That, you know, we haven't really touched upon that yet. You know, I mean, you have to pay for it, and then you don't even know if you're gonna get it back in return. Can you talk a little bit about how you can basically engage with your fans using ads?
Yeah, so we created a product called Promote It. It's probably 6 months old or so, and you could promote your band. You can promote a song. You can promote your shows now, and venues could actually promote shows as well, which I know you guys have been doing. So it's a Facebook ad, pretty much exactly the way you've been doing it now. If you have been, you know, you pick a couple of songs, it's what you sound like, more or less. But we track everything, and we send the person clicks on the ad, and it sends them to a landing page, and you can give them an option. You can give away tickets. You could again get the free email for a download or something like that. But we track, you know, how many interactions there are, how many friends were invited to a show, depending if it's for a show or an artist, how many people reached, impressions, click-throughs. So it's all valuable information that you get, and you don't get a lot of that if you're doing just a straight-up Facebook ad. And, you know, there's, like, budgets. It's, like, $25 to, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars, I believe.
And so. I think one of the interesting things about that, Lou, is that you're... the people who see the ads can actually share them on other Facebook pages, and that's actually where your fans are actually becoming promoters for you. So it's like...
It goes back to the word of mouth.
Right, it's word of mouth. So you, like, the venue is trying to promote a show, and then the fans who like the show are going to in turn promote it, and then it just becomes like a viral thing. And that's, you know, basically you're paying for a certain number of clicks for the ad, but then this ad could blow up into, you know... even more clicks just because of how viral it became.
Yeah, we encourage shares and likes all throughout the whole process.
Yeah, it's really good. So, and that also is part of the, you have something similar for the artists as well?
Yeah, it would be the same thing. It would be you promote a song or the band itself, and it's the same thing. We just track all the interactions. So instead of giving away a ticket, you're giving away a song or a share.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, is there any artists here who have actually used Facebook ads, and have you found it to be successful? I guess we can talk about that. I'm just curious. You found it to be successful?
No, it's very, very dependent on the city that you're using. The city. And you already have some, so you're
much more likely to
get the shares and the likes in a city that you've already established your audience, to where people are motivated to share it with their friends because they know it's going to be a good live experience if you're providing that live experience for them.
And you start the process off... You know, knowing what kind of bands you're like, if your band sounds like Metallica, you want to promote it to Metallica type thing.
But it doesn't sound like that's what you're saying. I want to clarify. It sounds like you're saying in certain markets, are you saying it works better as awareness that you're a fan of mine, I'm coming to your city, you already know me, or I'm a new band and I'm in a genre of you like Metallica, you like me?
Facebook ad
those shows seem to get a much larger share-like ratio, which is then them hearing about it from a friend, which is what the whole first video was about.
Okay. So that's, it sounds like that they know who you are if it's your top five markets, their recognition.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I wanted. And I don't want to know if we're not – I'm not taking questions, but I know he had his hand up for a while, so I feel bad. That's important.
Oh, sorry about that.
Or you can just talk into it.
Also have a sore throat.
One or the other.
Okay, thanks. All right. Well, we're gonna get an opportunity for everybody to come up and ask questions into the microphone in a little bit. No, it's fine. But we're just gonna at this time. I just had one question for Laura, and that's what are some examples of some because we're talking a lot about fan engagement and online fan engagement and you know Facebook and all that. What are some non-online examples of fan engagement that have worked for you?
Yeah, I mean, we use our space for a lot of different things, and you know, obviously, it's really important to use online advertising to get people through the door. But once they get there, we really want to give them an experience that they're going to want to come back to. And a lot of that is using, you know, our bar and restaurant space to the advantage, to the most advantage. For instance, you know, if we have a band like Enter the Haggis, who is a Scottish type band, we'll do a whiskey tasting beforehand. Or we've had Southern Culture and the Skids, and we've done bourbon, beer, and burgers. And we'll give the people who are coming to those shows a discount. It's a separate event. You don't have to go to both. But it encourages the people to come out early, and then they get to actually meet with like-minded fans and do something that sort of we think makes sense for them. And those events always sell out.
That is so smart. I'm sorry to jump in. That is so contextual. That is so smart.
Yeah.
You make an experience, even if that's unbelievable.
Yeah, so that's really huge for us. And then the other half of it is we have a really large space in the lobby where fans can come and do meet and greets, and we have the security to back it up. And not like sort of the ones where, you know, you get the radio station and there's 20 people, and those are kind of annoying. But these are just like really informal, like come and sign your CD. And I think that probably at least half, if not more, of the artists that play our room, which is 650 cap, do this. And it's great, and people love it. And we're the only venue in town that I think that has a reputation for that. So that's really important on almost any level until it becomes a real security hassle, to just engage with your fans in an informal way, because then that's when they feel like, okay, I've had an experience. I'm friends with these people, even though maybe they're not. But, you know, it makes them want to bring their friends back and say, oh, yeah, I talked to this guy. He's really cute, whatever, you know. So in both of those ways, before and after the event, you know, the venues and the artists can do things.
That's very cool. Yep, that's great, Laura. All right, so I'd like to open it up to questions. So let's have everybody line up by the microphone, and we can take as many as we can. It looks like we have at least 15 or so minutes to take questions. And if we don't get through all of your questions, you can come up and see us afterwards or run into us in the hallway when we leave.
Thanks.
And we would like to limit to one question per person just to get everyone's question in.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So I run a New York-based music company called OK DJ FM, where we provide a better platform for artists to release free music by turning their fans into promoters of their free music releases. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think about how artists can be more creative about promoting the music they're releasing online and digital releases, and also about promoting free music and kind of the disparity between releasing music for free and also for paid download.
Can I ask you a quick question? How do you incentivize those fans to be promoters?
Artists do free giveaways, so top promoter of the artist gets free concert tickets, merchandise.
Okay. This is my personal thing. I think music sharing is such a genuine sort of like an emotional bonding thing with friends. And when I have something, let me just put it this way. If a friend ever shared a song with me and said, I think you'll really like this band or a song, I would take that seriously. But then if I found out that they were getting some sort of reward for it, I sometimes feel like it undercuts that. That's my opinion as an artist. I'm not saying it couldn't be entirely incredibly successful, but if I were to go to see a show at Laura's venue and I found out the friend going with me got a free ticket because I bought mine, I just feel like it'd make it a little bit less, more disingenuous experience for me.
That's so less feedback on my business model, more about promoting recorded music.
Sure.
How do you see artists engaging their fans around the recorded music and creating
Okay, so maybe not that way. I think using other platforms that are more genuine. I think just, look, social media has been around for thousands of years. What we're doing now is nothing new. We've gone back from, a broadcast medium was only around for 170 years. Now we're back to social media. It's every single chart you're seeing, it's friend to friend. So in any way that a fan can share their experience or an artist can be more like a fan or a friend, we're in an era where our fans have become our friends. Start acting like that and respect that your fans have a platform to speak on and be genuine, and that will carry over.
Thank you.
I just want to say I love your company. I know you're all shocked, right? No, but in all seriousness, I really think that I understand where Evan's coming from and the idea that we need to respect ourselves as artists and we shouldn't give our music away. And I'm sure you've all been to the publishing and licensing panels where they talk about getting paid and being with all the right PROs and everything. But I think that ultimately, if you have a lot of people coming to your show, like if I see somebody that comes to my show and brings 10 people every time, you can be damn sure I'm buying him a drink. And I'm not paying for his presence. I'm thanking him.
That's totally different. I think that's great. That's
yeah.
Wonderful.
So I think that's what you're saying is how to promote them. And I would definitely, this is the artist speaking, if there's somebody who's like, hey, I'm going to bring 20 people to your show, I'm going to be like, well, there's going to be a VIP table and a bottle of Cristal waiting for you. Thanks for coming. And that's just my way of giving back. And I'm not paying for you to come because you're already telling me that you're going to.
Exactly. But would you turn to someone and say, if you bring 20 people to my show, I'll get you a bottle of Cristal?
Yes.
In advance, you would say that?
Yes. Because when you're a starting artist, you need to get people in the room. And 0% of nothing is zero. So if I can get someone in the room who doesn't know anything about me to start, the next time I'm not going to buy them shit. But the first time, yeah, you know what I mean? It's like anything else. You know, people give their music away for free, not because they want to, but because they love their music so much and they want you to hear it. Okay. So if you have a great idea, you're going to have another one. If you have a great song, you're going to have another one.
Yeah,
if you don't, get out of the business.
I think new bands should give away songs all the time. Just to get it out there more and just to get people, you know, if it's really good, let them know about it. That's just my opinion.
I personally agree. I did not say that you shouldn't give away music for free. I personally, as an artist also, would it's a different story to incentivize. I think that if artists want to give away, I don't know if I said artists should not give away music for free. I did not say that. Just so we're clear.
All right, let's take the next question.
All right, I'm a student at Syracuse, and I'm working with an artist on campus, and obviously Syracuse isn't the best place to kind of, you know, break your scene, and we're able to, you know, there's plenty of content that we can send to venues in outside cities, and we've been able to kind of set up things with other bands in New York to try and get into that market, but in terms of getting into other cities like Boston or Philadelphia, other places where we think his music could really, you know, benefit from the crowd there, I guess an opinion or advice from artists and venues. Obviously, you can send the best looking, you know, high definition and, you know, sonically pleasing content you can. But, you know, we know that in the end, it's about they ask how many people can you bring in. And if you've never played there before, you know, you can't really say anything to that. So what do you guys, you know?
How does your band do in Syracuse?
I mean, we're, you know, they're outside of the Westcott Theater, which puts on much larger acts, we can't really get in there. There are some smaller local places, which we do, you know, relatively well and play house parties on campus, which is a good way to try and get, you know, get people involved.
Can you reach out to bands in other cities and trade out? Say, we'll let you open for us?
Yeah,
and
we've done that a few times. And, you know, it's just if it's easy to do in a city like New York because, you know, people in Syracuse, everybody knows someone in New York, but I guess
where you know nobody and you need to be able to build up the crowd. Yeah, it is a challenge. It definitely
we have something called a gig finder, which it's really, really useful. There's a couple of bands I was talking to last night that said they actually build tours around it. Mm-hmm. But just to reach out to the genre that you're in and bands that you might sound like or something like that and find those venues or even just contact those bands that have played at those venues that you do want to play at and just try to swap gigs with them.
It's really like, good. And also you might want to think about becoming like friends with somebody who's like a mini promoter in one of those cities. So maybe you'll meet somebody on Twitter who does promotion in one of those cities. And if it's one thing to ask them or to hire them, but it's another thing to actually like become friends with them or like at least electronically become friends with them where they actually they buy into what you're doing and then they'll become, you know, a promoter for you. Or another idea would be to, if you know some blogs or local blogs in the cities, you can try to contact them.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, sure. Laura, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, strip down your setup, like, if it's possible for you to even do acoustic shows, I don't know what kind of music you do, or whatever it is, like, make it as easy as possible for you to be the fourth band on the bill that night, you know, and not look for a lot of money, but if you are like, oh, yeah, you know, we can show up, and, you know, we can do three guides acoustic, plug it in and go, awesome. Yeah. Like, that's going to help you a lot.
Right. Okay.
What, did you say you got, your band throws really good house parties?
Yeah, I mean, he's a solo, you know.
So is he known for the house parties?
He's not, like, well known.
Oh, okay, like, this is like an out-of-the-box idea?
His band is starting to, he's kind of getting, it's like a natural band together.
I'm ready.
Because solo acoustic is in the best.
Okay, so he's playing in, like, living rooms, right?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so this is what I would do. I would go on Craigslist, I would find free furniture. I would ask them if I'd be allowed to bring it into the place. Then I would ask the bar if they would allow me to serve all my drinks in silo cups. I would have a big sign that said house party, and I would recreate the house party in that city. And it would be something that nobody else did.
Okay.
Out of the box.
Interesting.
Fan engagement.
That's good.
That is the artist brain and the business brain.
All right. Next question.
Hi, how's it going? My name's Deval. I have a question sort of directed towards Laura. I own a coffee shop in upstate New York, and I'm trying to figure out what makes our kind of music offering special. We don't really have, like, large touring groups coming through. We just have a lot of emerging, just starting acts. And I'm trying to figure out, we don't charge a cover. We just kind of let people come in. We get a donation sort of deal. But I'm trying to figure out what about our offering is special and unique and how we can kind of, you know, monetize that.
Well, you tell me, what is special about the music? What kind of music do you do? I mean, do you have, like, thematic? Are you, like, curating this? Or
You talked about contextualizing shows, and, you know, we're a cafe. You know, we do food. We do all these things.
Okay.
And, you know, this town Beacon that we're in is, like, this kind of up-and-coming, emerging artist town sort of deal. So I'm trying to capitalize in the most Gordon Gekko way, you know, on these emerging artists and kind of, like, position that to say, you know, catch them here first when they're starting, kind of thing. So I was just curious what kind of thoughts you guys had on sort of the record label / coffee shop kind of thing, which I guess is kind of...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we've done a lot of that, and we're sort of at the point now where we actually are known for that, and it's okay. But, I mean, how long has it been open?
A year and a half.
Okay. So, I mean, at this point, you know, do you feel like your following is growing now, or you still need to recharge it a little bit?
To recharge it, because it comes and goes. Sometimes we'll have really, like, Neutral Milk Hotel came in and did this really, like, awesome, like, out-of-the-box kind of show.
You need to talk about that all the time. Seriously. Like, you need to, because that's the thing. Like, we have, you know, we had Adele play, like, you know, one of her first shows in the States, and, you know, to 350 people or whatever. And, you know, you need to keep reminding people that they might see the next Neutral Milk Hotel at your place. And hopefully you can grab a couple of, you know, other up-and-comers and maybe some of these people from Syracuse who are looking for a place to play that are going to be, you know, the next big thing. And really focus on that a lot and say, like, this is where you're going to see it. And the fact that it's free is huge. I mean, you have to really push that a lot, because I wish I could do all free shows. It would be a lot easier to get people out. But, I mean, you know, do also, like what I was saying before, do more event-based things. You know, we did an art material swap. And, you know, try and get as many different groups of people in so that they can see what you're doing. And maybe they're not immediately interested in just, like, the super music fans. You know, they're going to come out anyway because they want to listen to music all the time. But there's all these other people that may be into coming to your place, you know, every couple weeks or once a month. And you want to get them in the first time, show them what you're doing, give them a great coffee.
Right. I mean, we're putting together a little compilation CD of, like, five artists that play. They're all independent. They're all just starting.
Awesome.
And, you know, it's not a record label, but we want to get involved in sort of promoting what they do. Yeah, I mean.
It just quickly, from a contextual basis, if I were an artist playing there, I think I'd, especially for free, maybe you have, like, I don't know, like the chalkboard or whatever, but you have my name featured, and maybe you ask me my favorite drink that you serve, and everyone who buys that drink tonight gets 20% off that drink for contextual. Like, I love the vanilla latte or whatever it is. So now you have the artist sort of endorsing your product as well as giving everyone else, incentivizing them, come have the latte, and, you know, that might work.
Another just, you know, quick, you know, from Knitting Factory's perspective, being involved with as many groups as you can that are in the community, whether they be charity events or whether they be local businesses that have an impact or any community, you know, community leaders and centers of influence, tell them that you're going to host a party for them. and then invite artists and even have them help you pick out the artist or curate the show.
Yeah, we're actually working with Big Brothers, Big Sisters
yeah,
right now.
Do,
so.
Keep yeah. doing it. That's right. wonderful. And make sure you press release it.
Cool. Give yourself a break. You're a year and a half old.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing a good job.
And if you want to bring couches in, you
bring
can
some
get...
couches. They're free on Craigslist.
Right on. And that's the coffee shop, 453 Main Street. That's the coffee shop, 453 Main Street, Beacon, New York.
Good job.
Bring it.
All right. Next question.
Well, hi, everyone. My name's Will White, and I'm a singer-songwriter. And basically, my question goes out to you, Evan. As you were describing this site, like, my mind just was racing with all the like cool ideas, but I have like a lot of questions, but I feel like you probably answered them on your website, so I just wanted to know if you could go over your website for us again.
Do you mind just doing that after?
Just saying the name.
Oh, stage it. I'm sorry. I just didn't want to stageit.com because okay. You can stage it from your bedroom, from your living room, from your hotel room, from your kitchen, backstage. Yeah, sorry about that.
That was all.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Music Crush Girl. I have a fan site, musiccrushgirl.com.
Say it again.
Music Crush Girl, like when you fall in love, but with music. I noticed that That's you've awesome. Got artists and venues and marketing represented up there, but not fans, and that seems to be kind of what we're all focused on here, is trying to get those people to engage and interact. I guess my question is, I can basically get more recognition going to a restaurant in town through Foursquare, rewards, discounts, whatever, as a foodie than I can as a fan interacting with people. On my site, it's 100% love, no hate. When I fall in love with a band, I will promote the shit out of them, not because they're giving me anything, but because I love them.
Beautiful.
But sometimes it would be nice for there to be some reciprocity there, or that they know that I exist out in the world. And it rarely happens, honestly. And I deal a lot with smaller kind of up-and-coming indie bands.
So you're a super fan, and they don't know you're a super fan.
I'm a super fan. They don't know it. But I feel like there is some power. And I think what Reverb Nation does with your little sort of ecosystem that you created is getting close, but as a fan, I think they're and interacting with other fans, I think there is such power to the passion that they have. They're the ones who are buying things and getting engaged, and they're not being recognized at all. There's no sort of gaming strategy for fandom. There's no sort of structure in place to really capitalize on that.
I think the technology is there. I mean, look, we have the Facebook application.
Absolutely.
And these other things, but I think you need to talk to the artists. I mean, I think it's the artists that are the ones that need to do the communicating with.
But,
I don't know how to.
But you,
I
can tell as you. A technology person, you also have the capability to create something around that for artists. You've done it with so many other things for Reverb Nation, like figuring out what those needs are. Fans are customers. They have customer needs. It's basic sort of marketing research. You understand what they're looking for and what they need. I know that you guys are more focused on sort of the business side of it, but I think there's a great opportunity for that fan.
Let me just say this. I've been an artist, as I mentioned earlier, for a long time, okay? 18 years. I know all of my diehard fans for years. They come to shows. I know them all. And when I see them, as they come back again and again. So even if we stay offline for a bit in the real world or whatever, like, I don't know how these people don't know if you're really doing – I'm not challenging that you're not doing what you're doing, but I'm saying, like, I feel like there are people that do this for me as my band for years online, and I know them. I reach out to them, and I do say thank you because I recognize they're the same people on the chat board, the same people that come to every show and buy every single thing I ever put out. So I know that they exist. And the other thing in terms of, like, what we're specifically doing is – we have – not only do we have a tip jar on our platform, but we let the artist knows exactly who the top tippers are, who's at every show, how much they spent on every single thing, and we encourage them to reach out and write a thank you note the second the show's over. So we're trying to change that online, but mirroring like real life, I definitely know who these people are. In every city, they're the same people that come. In fact, they come from other cities. I know if I'm playing in Texas – from Dallas, from Houston, from Austin, those people are going to be anywhere in Texas for the most part, except for El Paso, because that's just –
I'm not sure if you're actually reaching out to the artist directly or reaching out to their management, but I've found that managers of bands are actually not too hard to reach out to. And if you're actually, if you have something that you can show them that you're doing and just say, hey, I want to introduce myself. I'm doing this for you. I love you guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe they just don't know about you, but then when they find out about you, you know, they might appreciate you more.
I totally agree. But yeah. I also think it's not just for me. I mean, I represent fans. That's
right.
Right.
You guys are representing
just like joining street teams. I mean, you could just join, you know.
Street team, what does that do for me as a fan?
I'm doing
that anyway.
Right.
But for me and other fans, is there a way to reward and recognize me? Is there a platform for that?
Well,
like
street
I said,
team members should get rewarded. I mean, that's part of their...
What would your reward be? If you could pick, what would your reward be?
Yeah, what do you want?
What
if
you want?
I go on Foursquare and just check in at some place, I might get a discount. I might get some points that I can go shove in the face of my friend and go, yeah, I beat you this week. There's nothing like that for fans. So what is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on Clout.
When is your panel?
You just need to be fans of the right band.
Yeah, we have to move to the next question. So if you want to talk to us after,
but before we move on, I really want to talk to you afterwards because I have a great idea for you, but we just don't have time.
Come up to us at the end.
Yeah, come after.
All right, next question.
Hey, what's happening? My name's Todd Tate. I'm the community architect for the SF Music Tech Summit, and I've been working with artists for the last couple of years doing custom WordPress production and social media asset production. And I've had the pleasure of working with a couple clients that have been top on the top charts of the Reverb Nation charts. And I just thought, you're not up on the engagement rankings there, but I still think it's really cool when an artist gets on the top list. And I was wondering, for engagement of the room, if you could tell the room what's the best way to engage the Reverb Nation community to be like number one in San Francisco and number one in L.A.?
Well, I mean, we're a business tool, a marketing platform. We're not necessarily like a Facebook, you know, fan type site. So are you talking about you want to engage with the fans on Reverb Nation?
Well, you know, I've worked with the platform for a long time, and I've seen some artists that aren't that popular reach number one. And it's a fucking great thing to put on your press kit and
so
stuff like that.
Our band, you know? Equity chart.
yeah, those are really cool.
So it's based
so if you
on
explain like, the room how those exactly work.
Right, exactly. It's it's an algorithm, and I don't have all the details of it. It's pretty complicated, but it's based on things like awareness of your music, engagement. Are the fans getting back to you? Are they sharing plays? Fans on Facebook, MySpace friends are still worth something. Maybe a little bit, maybe that bunch. But, you know, there's things like that. It's just a value that we give it. I do think it needs some tweaking. I think when you get more involved with some, like, shows, if you're playing a lot of shows, that might even be already in there already. But if you're being picked to play at a lot of the festivals we work with or a lot of the venues, you should jump the charts, in my opinion. You know, we're working on it.
Okay, last question.
Mine's not really a question, but just a suggestion since we're talking about social media tools and things like that. Is I work for a company called TopLip.com.
Can you say it again? I'm sorry.
TopLip.
I
wore the shirt just in case people couldn't pronounce it.
Right on.
But we've actually worked with Laura a little bit on a few shows. But what it is, we have a pool of aspiring musicians, and we offer them unique opportunities to open up at shows for bigger artists. Mm-hmm. So, you know, touring artists like we've worked with, you know, Brad Paisley, Andy Grammer, Parachute. But anyway, so this is a suggestion for you artists out there that it's just an opportunity for you guys to rather play in, you know, house shows and things like that, upload to the website, and you can have a chance to open up for some big acts in the country. So
thank you. Great. That's great information.
For the idea. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to the panel. We're going to be – feel free to come and talk to us if you have any further questions, and we'll also be out in the hallway as well.